This week, the Wisconsin Family Council issued a major report, Wisconsin's Cultural Indicators. It's the first update in 6 years of the report. To discuss that report, thanks to Julaine Appling, president of the Wisconsin Family Council. Julaine, welcome back to Wisconsin Eye.
Oh, it's always good to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity, Steve.
Well, on the back of the report, I think this is why you issue it. Since 1986, Wisconsin Family Council has been advancing Judeo-Christian principles and values in Wisconsin. This report is issued to inform Wisconsin citizens, policymakers, and churches about the important pro-family legislative and cultural issues, correct?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Now, we have a responsibility as an organization, a statewide organization that's all about families, to let the important people in our state, the decision makers, the community leaders, and church leaders know where we are. What's the health of our state? What's the health of our families? What are the trends? What are the data show about the well-being of our state?
In the executive summary, which you signed, you say the report reveals how healthy or unhealthy our state is in specific areas and in a general sense. Overall, the last report was issued in 2008. Changes from 2008 to 2014. Wisconsin families generally better off or worse off, ma'am?
Well, to some degree, it depends on what characteristic you look at. You know, in some areas, for instance, teen births, we're doing better. You know, as a state, even the city of Milwaukee, we're doing better on that. And there's lots of reasons for it. So, you know, that's a good thing. We're doing better in the area of abortions. We're doing better in a number of areas. But on the whole, where we stake our claim is that Wisconsin is as strong as its traditional families are strong. And when those families are strong and independent of government, then our state is stronger. And what we see, one of the alarming things that we've seen, is that more and more family units are becoming dependent on government for a number of reasons.
Right.
But part of that is the structure of the family has changed. And that is a statistic that has not gotten better from the 2008 look.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. The most significant changes since 2008, you just gave us one. There's more family dependence on government programs. What else leaped out at you since 6 years?
Well, one of them is, and to some degree, and it's important to understand this as we talk about this, Steve, I think, is that the data that is in the cultural indicators is data that is collected over time and compared over time. So the most reliable data we have on that is data coming out of the 2010 census.
Mm-hmm.
That's broken out by states. And by the way, you know, the data that's included in this isn't our data. We went to the government agencies, to the places like the census.
Yeah.
And extracted the data for comparative purposes. So sometimes the data isn't 2012 or 2013, it's 2010.
Yes.
So because we're comparing it over time. And so one of the things that jumps out to me is the for instance, the rate of cohabitation, all right? The drop in the marriage rate. Those are alarming statistics to me. Commensurate with that is a drop in the birth rate. Wisconsin has been below replacement birth rate, fertility rate, if you will, since 1975. And one of the things that's happening, I mean, look, Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance just comes out with a report in the last couple of weeks saying what? We have a job shortage coming.
Yes, we do.
Labor shortage, not job, but labor shortage.
Right.
As baby boomers retire, who's going to replace them? As I look at the statistics, it's not a skills gap that we have, it's a people gap. And so you can't have a below replacement fertility rate or birth rate for over, 30 years, 30 mm-hmm. plus years, and not have eventually a labor shortage. Because people are having fewer children, we're aborting, even though our abortion numbers are down, we're still aborting over 7,000 children a year, or right at 7,000. So those things catch up. Those are alarming to me as I look at the statistics in this particular publication.
I'm going to ask you about some specific numbers in a little bit, but going back to your executive summary, you have a number in here that I'd never seen before. I want to ask you about it, and we're going to show it on a graphic. It is also worth noting that every year Wisconsin spends at least $737 million of taxpayer money for fractured families defined as divorce and unwed childbirth. Talk about, is this the first time the council developed this number?
No, and we didn't actually develop the number. In 2008, there was a national study done. A group like ours in Georgia collaborated with the Institute for American Values and some other groups with some great statisticians and researchers and put together a publication that talks about the taxpayer burden for fractured families
mm-hmm.
because we're all involved with it.
We're all
paying for it. And so what they did was they put together this national picture and then they broke it out by the states. And they used hard costs. And that's important for people to understand the difference between a hard cost and a soft cost. Hard costs are things that you can actually go to some agency and extract a number. Mm-hmm. The soft costs aren't even included because they're intangible, but we know they're there. We just don't know how to quantify them. So every year, like clockwork, and that's now a six-year-old number. I tell people I think it's probably much closer to $1 billion now.
Okay, that's one of my questions. The 737 is from 2008. There's no newer number than that.
No.
But the point is that $737 million, since a penny on the sales tax raises about $890, almost three-fourths of how much you'd get if you raise their sales tax from 5 to 6, is going for these specific programs. What's the toll of this on families?
Oh, look, the toll is incalculable. It really is. I mean, you know, let me make sure I understand. Are you talking about the financial toll it takes on families who are paying for that?
What are the specific programs covered by the 737, the hard costs?
Well, some of it is certainly through the Department of Corrections. You know, we're talking about, and we're talking about Department of Justice costs too, because we are inevitably talking about court cases that have to get involved with divorce, where you've got the cost of keeping the judges on the bench and all of that. That's all directly picked up by taxpayers. Mm-hmm. So you've got all your family law involved there. You've got your Department of Corrections with imprisonment that happens because statistically we know children who are in single parent homes are much more likely to get involved with the law and end up in prison. So you've got some of those costs. You've got children and family services costs, where you've got social welfare programs, you've got social services involved who are going out and running, you know, tracking down kids who have been abandoned, kids who are, you know, whatever the issue is. Mm-hmm. All of those costs are included in there.
Does it include the police costs, the 9/11, domestic incident calls?
Sure, part of
abuses.
It. Abuses. As the law enforcement has to step in and handle domestic violence cases or, you know, domestic disturbances. The study is still available online. It's a fascinating study because it really looks at what this is. And, you know, you extrapolate that to a national level, and it's absolutely staggering. I tell politicians this all the time and our state legislators. If we really were serious about helping Wisconsin get our economic ship righted, mm-hmm. one of the first things we would do is enact policies that impact keeping families together.
Having gone through the report, one of the things that strikes me, and I want to ask you about, is the gap between household income, who raises family, poverty, Milwaukee and non-Milwaukee. Now, this was not covered in the 2008 report?
Correct.
It's covered in great detail in the new report. What's your number one takeaway from what's happening in Milwaukee families, to Milwaukee families?
Milwaukee families for decades have been disintegrating. Fatherlessness, Steve, is written all over this report, all over it. Fatherlessness in our state, and in Milwaukee in particular, is epidemic. You know, women are having babies, choosing not to marry the husband of their children for a number of reasons. Some of them probably valid in some instances, you know, but what you see in Milwaukee is the result of fatherlessness. You see the loss of the impact of that male figure in the home. You know, not some distant connection. I mean, you go into these cities, and Milwaukee is our example. They're all over the country. You find situations where the children don't even know who their father is. And what happens is, you know, as that unit disintegrates, there's not the discipline, there's not the security, there's not the stability, there's not the earning power that you find in a two-family, a two-parent mom and dad home. And so as a result of that, Milwaukee is reeling. Look, one of the statistics in the book is that 80% of the babies born into Milwaukee right now are born to single moms. 80%. Now statewide, it's about 37%. So Milwaukee skews our numbers.
Times. Yeah. 2.5 times.
Yeah. But Milwaukee is our largest population center. I cannot ignore Milwaukee. I don't think anybody living in Bayfield can ignore Milwaukee. Because what happens in Milwaukee plays into how our dollars are spent, our tax dollars, how we do programs, how do we do services, and you know, all of that. We all are reaping the consequences of what's going on in Milwaukee. And I think that one of the things is churches need to step in here more and more. there's still a significant impact on society. And as the church in Milwaukee begins to step in more and take a stronger role, I think we can start, number one, encouraging people to marry. We need to get back to this what I call culture of marriage. Marriage shouldn't be shunned. It's a great institution, and it is the stability for every society. It's not just Milwaukee or Wisconsin. It's all societies. And it needs to be promoted. It needs to be championed. And people need to be educated on it in the city of Milwaukee. Otherwise, in however many more years before we do another update on this,
yes,
I hate to see the numbers.
Well, let me, since the council didn't have figures for Milwaukee in the 2008 report, it now does in the 2014 report. Is the council going to rechannel its efforts in Milwaukee, and does the council have credibility in Milwaukee? Who can enact the changes needed in our largest city?
You know, what I can tell you on that, Steve, is that for years we've been working with what we consider to be leaders in the Milwaukee area. For instance, about 4 years ago now, we were in Milwaukee heavily working with churches of all sorts to have them sign a community marriage agreement. And there were a number of churches that were interested in that and did sign on. Now, it doesn't have the momentum we want it to have,
right,
because it's very labor intensive to maintain it. But that was a good first step. We just did an event over there with an African-American church talking about marriage. I mean, that's what they asked us to come and talk about. So we are working hard to connect with the right people and to resource them. We're not looking to own those churches. They're their churches. We just want to resource them and help them understand how significant this problem is.
What has devalued marriage in Milwaukee, Julaine?
That's a good question. Part of it is, and I think there's some truth to this. I've talked to people who have, they're real stakeholders on this in Milwaukee. They're people who can make a difference in Milwaukee. And part of what they tell me is that unemployment is a factor. That women don't want to marry men who can't be providers, who don't have jobs. You know, that's not to say that the women are interested in having a job and a career themselves, but they also don't want to marry somebody they see as not being out there in the workforce. So to some degree, the unemployment numbers have hurt marriage. You know, unfortunately, just to throw this in here to this conversation, I think it's important. Unfortunately, marriage is beginning to be kind of on an economic divide. Those who have get married. Those who have money and education get married. Those who don't have money and don't have education don't get married. That is a very scary trend.
And one number that struck me on page 7 of the report, women are responsible for raising most African-American teens in Wisconsin. In 2010, 70% of African-American teenagers between 15 and 19 in Wisconsin were raised in female householder, no husband present family households. You're speaking largely of Milwaukee, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, because again, they skew those numbers. And our largest population of African-Americans is in Milwaukee.
In the wake of the tragic shooting of the 10-year-old girl who was playing on the Clark Street playground, there were a lot of voices, a lot of angry people. Did the council issue a statement in terms of some solutions, some hope, a situation like this?
Well, and it's a good question. We didn't. You know, on one level, we could issue those kinds of statements all the time. You know, I believe it was, what, about a month and a half or so ago that Sheriff David Clark had an op-ed in one of the newspapers, and he was talking about the issue we're talking about today, what's happening to the family in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And not in the same kind of terms that we talk about it necessarily, but close. You cannot keep the family unit disintegrating and the father being absent so much of the time and expect for good things to happen. Statistically, and I'm not talking about just what we're showing, I'm talking about the whole gamut of social science research. Fathers are critical, absolutely critical in development and the well-being of children. And when they don't have that, they are susceptible to all a host of ills. Let's just put it that way, pathologies and ills that will come back not only on them personally, but on society at large. That's what you're seeing in these kinds of horrific shootings. And if you trace these things back, I don't know for sure because I haven't looked at this yet, but if you trace it back, somewhere you're finding fatherlessness.
Okay. And there's one other number in the report that we worked up a graphic on, and it speaks to the income and resources gap. Married couple families had the highest median income in Wisconsin and Milwaukee, with $72,003 and $61,415 respectively, while non-family households had the lowest median income in Wisconsin and Milwaukee, with $29,357 and $25,625. That's quite a gap.
Well, it is a gap. You know, and
because
some
it speaks to the resources, the ability to buy the basic things for families. And go ahead, excuse
well,
me.
Well, no, it absolutely does. And what it also does is it speaks to the entitlement side. Okay? And we have a whole table in this report that shows the disincentive for women to marry, because the entitlement programs, if they get married, they lose all these entitlements. They mm-hmm. they lose $37,000 a year in entitlements if they get married. Now, on this income side, you know, we point out in here that some of what happens in married families is you may have two wage earners, which automatically increases your income in the home, for most homes anyway. Right. But that's not always the case. I mean, you know, a good portion of women, and men, by the way, are still choosing to stay home to rear their families. We act like it doesn't ever happen, but it does. So what you have is this huge divide economically created because you have no even opportunity for second income. Everything is on primarily, and by the way, we show male households and female, single male and single female households. Marked difference there too.
Yes.
Between the male income and the female income.
Yes.
So there is,
yes.
You know, there is that disparity between what a woman is able to make and what a man is able to make.
And you also point out, it's on page 14, there's a six-fold increase in the amount of food stamp benefits paid under food share. 1990, $185 million, $1 billion in 2010. That goes back to your increasing reliance on government programs, which the council doesn't think is a healthy thing.
Correct? Oh, we absolutely do not think that's healthy. Independent families are Wisconsin's best natural resource, bar none. They're the best wage earners, the best taxpayers, the best community volunteers, the most stable structure you can find to build on for our state. And as the family, so the state. I mean, it's just very true. This book bears that out in living mm-hmm. color. And so it's very important that we keep weaning families off dependency, not making, I mean, when you go through this report and you look at that, as we built that table, how many programs are available for people? I'm not one who says we should just pull the carpet out, but we need to start building, number one, an attitude towards dependence for families, that it's a good thing. And secondly, we need to begin weaning people off that appropriately, so with compassion and with a good time schedule. But it is not in our state's best interest, it's not in our family's best interest to make it easier for people to be dependent on government.
Well, now let's talk about a couple other dimensions. This report came out in May, I assume, and this is a question, so it can become part of the fabric in the elections and the campaign season,
well,
correct?
Well, certainly. We talk to candidates about this all the time. You know, we'll be giving a copy of this to every sitting legislator after they're seated in January. Okay, everyone in the state government will get a copy as far as the executive branch, the heads of all of our agencies and all of that. We're sending them out to all the school districts. All 426 school districts, school administrators will get a copy. Churches, pastors, and many of them will get a copy. You know, our U.S. congressional delegation will get a copy. We're using this, as you indicated, right now. When we sit down with candidates to talk about, you know, running for office and getting into this fray, you need to understand this, folks. You need to understand that we're not really interpreting at all. We do bullet points that show, we try to connect some dots, but we're letting the data stand for it on its own and speak for itself. And if I'm a candidate, I want to know this because I'm interested in the health and well-being of this state. And candidates talk all the time, and sitting legislators and elected officials talk all the time about getting Wisconsin squared away financially.
Yes.
It's right here. I mean, I jokingly say, but you know, that $737 million, someday we're going to talk about real money.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, in the wake of this report, you did it, you know, first one in 6 years. How is this going to shape the agenda of the Family Council for the 2015-2016 legislative session? Are you going to do things differently? What are you going to emphasize Milwaukee? more. What are your goals for the next session?
You know, that's a great question, because that is one of the reasons that we do this kind of work. It helps shape what we do. One of the first things, and I've talked about this for a number of years, but one of the first things we're going to be doing legislatively is working with legislators to look at how we deal with entitlements. What does policy look like that incentivizes marriage? Look, we have a marriage tax penalty. I don't believe it was purposeful, Steve. I think it's just grown into it through all of the machinations and layering that we have in our tax code.
Right.
But it's there. That's got to go. We need to look at the budget, and I'm especially focused on the budget, because so much of what we need to get done in this area, entitlements and all that, needs to go into that budget. So we need to get rid of that tax penalty. We need to start incentivizing marriage and de-incentivizing not marrying the father of children. And those are policies we need to look at. I think we collectively have to look at Milwaukee. What can we do in Milwaukee? Now, those kinds of policies I was just talking about will have a direct impact on Milwaukee. Well, we need to look at ways to help African-American men in particular find jobs and to get the skills training that they need to go out and become, you know, wage earners that make them attractive and desirable for women to marry.
Does part of that mandate include looking at our K-12 schools and the dropout rate in Milwaukee? If you're an African-American young man, I think it's more than 50% that you're going to drop out of MPS. Is that part of what's going to be the council's new emphasis, since you have new data on Milwaukee?
Well, it is. You know, we're ardent school choice proponents and champions.
Do you like all those options, choice and vouchers and charters?
Absolutely. And I like them all. You know, there's some that we like more than others. I think one of the best things we've ever done in Milwaukee to help the educational aspect for the inner city is the parental choice program. You know, more and more parents are taking advantage of that. I'm glad that the cap is, you know, basically off there in Milwaukee. I wish it were off statewide, because I think it's, but I think we do have to address
school issues. So in the next session, that 1,000 limit should be popped.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
If any parent wants to put, if their income qualifies.
Well, yes, and I think we need to look at income qualification too. You know, all parents should have options, and we have to be careful about what we do with these income qualifications. But let me point out that Milwaukee, when you talk about dropout rate, one of the very best ways to ensure that a young person completes high school is to come from an intact married mom and dad family.
Mm-hmm.
Statistically, it is just there in black and white. I mean, you go to any social science research, it just shows it. The best way to ensure a good education and even, you know, higher education for young people, excelling in school, you know, making it through school, staying in school, the very best advantage you can give a child is for them to stay or to be brought up in the homes of their married moms and dads. And I hope you see the cycle there. If we want to stop that dropout rate amongst our inner city kids, regardless of Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, I don't care where it is, then we need to promote that intact family. It's kind of magic, you know? I mean, it takes work to keep it and to make it, but it is so good. If I'm a decision maker right now, one of the things I'm most concerned about is the future.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure we have a workforce, an educated workforce, a talented workforce, a committed workforce, taxpayers, so that we can support all these programs that we enjoy, many of them here in our state. And so I'm looking to the future. I want to make sure that the vast majority of kids that are going to grow up to be the next entrepreneurs, academicians, creative genius workforce that we have in our state have the best advantage possible. I want to do policies that encourage people to marry and stay married.
As you talk to candidates, you're going to ask them about some of the numbers in this 70-page report. Let me ask you this. It's a political question. Do you have more luck with Republican candidates than Democrats?
Yes, we do.
Why? I mean, if the problems that I read in this report about Milwaukee elects is represented by Democrats, shouldn't they? Why is there a partisan edge to how to address these major problems?
Well, I think everybody acknowledges the problem. The difference is in the solution. That's a different ideology.
You like vouchers, Democrats don't. Oh, go ahead, excuse me.
Well, their answer seems to be, and I'm not, you know, this is not necessarily a broad brush stroke, because there are exceptions, there have been exceptions. I don't know that I see exceptions in the current legislature, but there are notable exceptions in past legislative sessions where we had different people representing Milwaukee. But by and large, the Democrats look at it and say, well, if we just put more money into it, if we just add more programs, if we just up the amount of money, then we take care of it. It's not just throwing money at the situation that makes a difference. I mean, right now we're throwing millions and millions of dollars, I mean, at this problem. $737 million is pretty real. And adding another entitlement program, you know, doesn't answer it. The answer is we have to come back and find a way to promote the institution that is in the best interest of all of us. Look, family is good regardless of ethnicity, race, religion, whatever. It is good, and it's good for all of us. And so that's what we've got to start looking at. So the Democrats come at it from one angle. You know, typically a Republican will look at it and say, similar to what I'm saying, mm-hmm. and we need some policies that encourage people to get married, not discourage them, because we pay the money to stay, you know, to be a single parent. And so it's a difference not in the understanding of the problem, but in how we solve it.
Is the council's political arm then going to continue to endorse and call for the reelection of Governor Walker and the GOP majorities in both the Senate and the Assembly?
You know, I can't really speak for that, because the political action committee that we have through Wisconsin Family Action is more than me. It's 9 members. And so we have not yet issued our first
round
of endorsements.
That'll be the group that'll be talking to candidates?
Right.
I understand.
Yes, and we've begun that.
In the past, has the group, has the political arm endorsed Democrats?
I believe we have endorsed a couple. You know, just to clarify that, we don't go out and actively solicit candidates for endorsement. We let them know that we're here, and that if they are interested in our endorsement, they can come to us. So typically, we don't have a rush of Democrats coming to us because of our positions on marriage, family, life, and liberty.
Okay. I had other questions on the report, but I do want to ask you about a very pressing issue now. The challenge to Wisconsin's constitutional prohibition of same-sex marriage. It's in federal court, and recently Attorney General Van Hollen asked Judge Crabb, who's presiding, if you strike down our constitutional prohibition, issue a stay. Do you think Van Hollen was waving the white flag of surrender in that, Julian?
No, I don't think he was waving surrender. You know, immediately, February 3rd is when the ACLU, on behalf of these 16 same-sex couples, filed the lawsuit in the courts. Since then, there have been, I don't know how many states have had similar challenges, and they've already had rulings. And those rulings have generally, well, exclusively gone against supporting the marriage protection
amendments. You surprised that it's been struck down in Oregon and most recently Pennsylvania?
No.
You're not?
Not surprised in the wake of it. I am profoundly disappointed. I cannot express how disappointed I am. I'd like to know when we the people became I the judge. All right. That with a stroke of a pen, a single federal judge in all of these states, it's like 17 or 18 states now, has undermined, discounted, disregarded, undone the will of the people who voted for these amendments. Now, you know, if the people in this state want to change the definition of marriage, do what we did. Take it through 2 consecutive legislative sessions. Mm-hmm. Take it to a vote of the people on a statewide ballot. That's how you do this. You don't run to the courts for doing an end run around. So I think actually what Van Hollen was doing was being prudent.
Prudent, okay.
Yeah, he was being prudent. He was saying, look, Pennsylvania just, their judge just said, gone with the amendment, and immediately said same-sex marriage can happen. Okay, the redefinition of marriage is now the law. He didn't put a stay on it, but there's going to be appeals.
You sound like you expect Judge Crabb to throw out our constitutional amendment ban.
Well, I just, you know, every time a judge in another state does that, it just empowers and encourages the same kind of decision on another judge. Judge Crabb has a history in this state. We've worked with her for a long time. I've watched a number of decisions that she's made. She just threw out a ministerial exemption, a year ago, that's been in place for decades.
Well, that's that household exemption.
The household exemption, yeah.
Through the tax code.
Exactly.
Through the tax code.
I mean, yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
If Judge Crabb throws out our constitutional ban, what should be the response of Governor Walker, Attorney General Van Hollen, and GOP legislators who voted for it?
Well, I would like to think that they would come out and use their pulpits, if you will, their podiums, to make a statement that it's tragic that the will of the people has been overridden by a single judge. You know, I would hope that they would come out and support traditional marriage. That's my hope. You know, once these things, I get asked this question all the time. Well, what can we do? You know, well, it's in the courts. I can't go petition the court. You know, I can't go and write letters to the editor. I can write letters to the editor. They're not going to hopefully sway a judge. Mm-hmm. You know, once it's in the courts, it's pretty much out of our hands. You know, what do? You go back into the legislature and try to craft language that will withstand judicial scrutiny? Well, what is that judicial scrutiny? What does that language look like? Who knows now? You know, I'm hopeful. I don't think it's a pre-done thing for Judge Crabb at all.
Right.
But I think that J.B. Van Hollen has been prudent. I think that you need to look realistically.
Okay. Then do you want the Supreme Court to take one of these cases and finally resolve it? It seems to me like it's whether it's a... So are you afraid of how the Supreme Court would rule on the issue?
You know what? I have the best job in the world, Steve. I get to promote marriage in this state. It's an incredible institution. I'm not afraid of the Supreme Court decision. I think that out of all these states that have had these ACLU lawsuits, there's going to be at least one that goes to the Supreme Court. By the way, this one in Wisconsin is the first one that will probably reach the Seventh Circuit. Okay, so I'm not afraid of it. I think what this whole discussion has done is provided an incredible opportunity for organizations like ours to continue and increase our educational work that we're doing border to border, you know, top, bottom, sideways in this state, helping people to understand that while marriage is a relationship between a man and a woman, it's also an incredibly important public institution. This book shows that kind of marriage is phenomenally important to the well-being of our state.
Then you would welcome a Supreme Court challenge saying essentially it's a state's right issue and it should be decided by 50 states, or the other side of it is there's a national ruling, there's a national decision voiding all same-sex bans on same-sex marriage, in which case, if you lost at the U.S. Supreme Court level, organizations like yours would do what?
We'd do exactly what happened with Roe v. Wade in 1973. We'd redouble our efforts to go out. You know, just because the Supreme Court issues those kinds of rulings, abortion's a great one. People don't have to have an abortion. As we get more and more educated, people don't have to have to agree with the redefinition of marriage or not marrying. We have the opportunity. Every crisis presents a great opportunity. We have the opportunity to show people why it's so good, why this unique institution of bringing men and women together is so good for the next generation. It's all about, technically speaking, it's all about the well-being of those who are coming behind us.
Okay, excellent. Let's wrap it up this way. As I cover the Capitol, I need to read reports like this. Where could somebody get this report?
They can visit our website at wifamilycouncil.org. It's available online there. We do ask for a suggested donation of $5 to help cover some of the costs of this. As you can understand, it's quite an undertaking.
70 pages with a lot of data, yes.
So they
can go to the site.
Absolutely.
Okay. Jelaine, thanks for coming in to talk about a major report. Hadn't been updated in 6 years. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks.